lineouts, racks.
Halls engage.
What an amazing try.
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class.
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Delcombe.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
The Springboks are back from Australia, where they won both their test matches against the Wallabies, the first one in Brisbane and the second in Perth, both fairly convincingly. And now they are preparing for their crunch mini-series against the All Blacks, one at Ellis Park and one at Cape Town Stadium. To look ahead to this, we basically lined up a chat with somebody who had been in the Bok camp and a much revered coach on the domestic scene and also a much revered broadcaster over the last 5 years. Brendan, do you want to do an additional introduction to our guest?
Well, I gave him a very good introduction as you're here in the interview, so I think I'll leave it at that. But suffice to say, an old friend of the pod, he's been on here before, and one of the greatest rugby brains in South Africa, Swayze the Brain. Have a listen. Today, our special guest is somebody that definitely needs no introduction. The presenter on the, I don't know if it's an award-winning show, but certainly one of the best shows on SuperSport. And also, well-known former Springbok assistant coach, former Lions coach, and all-around great guy, Swayze the Brain. Welcome, Swayze.
Hey, Brendan. Thanks for colouring me in like that. No, it's fantastic to talk to you guys again. I'm sitting here in Port Elizabeth. Great to talk to you.
I was thinking, as I was saying that, I mean, I could probably go way back to Griquas days and Sharks under 21 days, and then we've known each other a very, very long time, and you've been on our podcast before as well. I think, first of all, Swayze, you sitting in Port Elizabeth, we'll get to why now. But let's start with the Saturday. I mean, we had a very good Springbok win in very trying conditions. It looked actually absolutely horrible there in Perth. Just your thoughts on how the youngsters did?
Very, very impressed to play. You know, a lot of few guys said to me, the game was a bit boring. It was it's very hot and rainy. And Perth can be a tough place when it rains and stuff. It's almost when it rains in Bloemfontein, you know. It was tough conditions. Yeah, but all in all, you know, I thought it's a pity a game like that must go to non-contested scrums and that sort of thing. But if you look back and you think of professional rugby, that you tick the boxes, it was well done. It was lovely to see the best hooker in the world come on there and score the two tries. And so many positives. So many positives. I must say, Springbok rugby, and everyone knows it. It's the best place, I think, in many years, if not ever.
Swayze, in terms of our depth, because this is the one thing, the recurring thing from this tour that people talk about, the fact that Springboks make so many changes, 10 changes and a positional switch, from 1 week to the next, and there was no discernible dip in performance. Okay, the conditions didn't help, but the guys still, in the end, mastered those conditions, and they certainly mastered the opposition.
Yeah, for sure. It just shows you the depth we have. And Rossi said it when he started with in 2018, his whole thing was building caps, you know, and the amount of caps we have now. But to answer your question, what I really enjoyed, if you look at Grobbies at T, Norki at 5, and then 9 and 10, Trappies and Sasha, and 15 was the most experienced guy, and he's supposed to be a rookie as well, was Apelele Fassie. So all the decision makers were youngsters. The hooker who starts the scrum, the Norki, the lineouts, the playmakers at the back, but the pressure players, the 6, 7 and 8, and the centers were experienced guys. So it was not even close to a gamble if you look at the state of Australian rugby. It was a perfect time to test them away. I said before the first game, and they killed me on social media, I said I would have started Sasha. Knowing Brisbane, I would have started Sasha maybe in Newlands test, you know, and something like that, because you all know he's a bright, bright future ahead. And if you win two World Cups, it's amazing how the confidence becomes almost a synergy. Your 2 and 2 doesn't become 4, it becomes 6, 7. You can do what you want. It's like success breeds success, and that's exactly what happened at the moment. I feel it was a very successful tour. My tour with them there wasn't so successful. We lost against Australia in Brisbane. This time around, 10 bonus points on the lock. Must be a fantastic vibe in the camp and all the youngsters that he tried put their hands up.
You mentioned the Wallabies there very briefly. There were moments across those two matches where I thought, I haven't seen a Wallabies team that passive on their home patch for a long time, if ever.
Yeah, you know, you sit with Joe Smith. I know I followed him a bit in 2016-17 style of play. There's a few things I tried, copied from him, and I thought, oh, this guy's a, he's a, you know, he's a, he can play phases like no one, and he can play 8 to 10 phases here. But you know, if you don't have the grunt up front with a tight five, all these plans means absolutely nothing. And really, they would. I wonder if Pirates up front would have given them a go. You know,
I'll tell them as well.
Yeah. How are they going to fix that is going to be a problem. While they playing, if they're not going to start winning in their domestic competition and dominating there, I don't know how they're going to change it. Because what happens, I said earlier, success breeds success. But, you know, if you go on a negative spiral, you go into a pit you can't get out. So they've got deep, deep thinking to do. And Joe Smith, if you give him 15 guys on a place and against any other coach, he'll do well because he is a very good coach. But the old saying, you can only coach what you have, eh? And for me, that's Australian rugby is in dire straits. They're in a terrible place. I don't want to be there at the moment.
Yeah, I said last week when Liam and I were chatting that they're ninth in the world and they're sandwiched between Fiji and Italy. And if the Springboks had got those score lines against Fiji and Italy, we'd probably say, yeah, that's about right. And so I suppose in the way the score line is, we're exactly where they are at the moment. It's just interesting to me though, because I saw obviously Jake White's column saying that they've disregarded the grassroots level, etc. But yeah, there is a bit of an irony, and I mean you involved a lot in Super Rugby where we used to travel a lot, and then you used to keep on hearing from Australia about how South Africa shouldn't be in the competition, how they want to go it alone and bring Japan in, and all these sort of things, I suppose in a way, while we feel a bit sorry for them, yeah, there's a certain sort of irony in that we just, you think, well, you got what you deserved. And I know it sounds terrible now to say, but it really feels like, you were looking for that. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, weren't they the trendsetters, you know, to get rid of Super Rugby and the traveling and this and the jet lag and all this, as exactly what you said. So, but for me still, Liam and Brendan, for me it's still, I still want the Southern Hemisphere. If you think of how well Argentina played in that first set, All Blacks, Australia, South Africa, it's so important that all four are competitive and in a healthy state and we can compete. So, you know, I know the Aussies, not only the Aussies, the New Zealanders are just as guilty when it came to leaving us and going on their own. And I honestly feel they're going to still feel it later on, that if you play just against Samoa and Tonga and you play in your competition now against Australia, they're not getting tough, man. They're not up there with the physical stuff, guys. And in Test rugby, they just had to bounce back. They had to against Argentina. And then saying that, I haven't seen Argentina so good in 1 week and so terribly bad in the other week, you know. So, but you both of you know who the Jogger is when they played us. Within 5 minutes, Akers would turn to man and say, "Ons gaan nou 'n lekker dag hê vandag. It's going to be great fun. They haven't pitched." Or within the first 2 minutes, you say, "Wow, they arrived." So I don't know why they're so inconsistent. But to come back to New Zealand and Australia, the proof will be in the pudding coming now with that All Black team to South Africa. How did they take a dip or didn't they? Because remember, can you guys recall, I think we pumped them, if I say pumped them, we gave them 5 tries in Wellington a few years back, 35, I was involved 37, 35, and we came back a bit later to Loftus and we lost.
Yeah.
So what they can do as well, they fall back on their pride, the All Blacks, and then they're dangerous.
Yeah. I think it happened the same in Nelspruit. We beat them quite convincingly there in Nelspruit as well. And then they came to this park and they won the week afterwards. So it is a difficult one, but have you seen lots of changes in what Scott Robertson's done? Do you see anything there that the Boks should be worried about?
Look, for sure, the kicking strategy in the first game was nowhere. I couldn't believe what I saw there. They would have three goes, almost like that kicking touch you play. You've got three goes and then you must kick. And the kicking was so terribly bad. So they made Argentina look good. I see a lot of ball movement in the first test, and I saw it almost Crusaders hot potato rugby, where they believe the ball is the fastest guy on the pitch still. But in the second test, a bit more conservative, less offloads, more working hard in the ruck, more protecting the ball, more test rugby, definitely more test rugby. But you know, guys, what's my concern a bit down there? I'm going to put this in the correct way now. Razor Robinson wanted to please all the franchise coaches. He's got one from the Blues, one from this, one from there. And he made up his management to keep everyone happy. Where, as Arasi said, I want the best guys around me. I don't care where they're from, as long as I feel that they're the best guys. So what Razor did was almost the honorable thing for rugby in New Zealand, but I'm not so sure it was maybe the cleverest thing, you know, from a coaching unity part of it. And then you talk about the All Blacks. Where is all the stars? Where's Kieran Reid's toughness on decision making? Where's the tough guys? We can name them. Where's Sonny Bill? I don't see them long enough. I don't see those guys anymore that really make a difference. And then I think without Scott Barrett, the only enforcer there in the tight fives, as far as I'm concerned, yes, they're mild in the tight five. Eh?
Yeah, I think certainly you get the feeling if they lose to the Barretts, any of the Barretts, or all of them, and they lose Ollie Sevier, they completely different side. Whereas the Springboks lost, say three key players, it wouldn't be the same. The Boxers certainly got a lot more depth and a lot more players who can turn a game at the moment. But the Barretts and the Bowden especially, and Ollie Sevier, if those guys don't play well, then the All Blacks don't seem to play well.
No, and their bench, our bomb squad, is really, it's for me more reserves than impact players. Sam Kane, honorable guy, wrong word, sounds like in the parliament now. Sam Kane, great guy for the Chiefs. I was there on his dad's farm and stuff. We were there. Big. I think he's over his sell-by date. He's been injured too much. He's not really performing. So if you look at their bench coming on, it's not that mighty All Black bench that we used to play against in Super Rugby, some teams as well. They had player depth amazingly, Brendan. That's deteriorated. I don't think they can really pick 30 good All Blacks, where Rasi can pick 40 good Springboks.
Yeah.
So, what for you has been the most noticeable change in the way the All Blacks play under Scott Robertson? I mean, obviously, at the Crusaders, he had this reputation, bit of a maverick coach, does things his own way. But when you break it down to the nitty-gritty, what has he brought to the All Blacks that you feel is different and that, you know, potentially makes them better?
Look, they toughened up the second test for sure. They were much physical in every contact situation. The poor Argentinians were manhandled in that second because they had to do it. But if you from a technical point of view, I'm still battling to see what is the plan really. What they do, they play the blind a lot. They like to take it up and where other teams would bring it midfield, they eat on the blind again. And the second test, they were all a bit narrower, almost a live ball effect where you keep the ball alive close. You know, that sort of thing where the pick and goes come and TJ Perenara would just be close and play off there. But it's not so easy to see, okay, this is a definite style that what they're trying to do. All I'm saying to you, they were much more conservative and they protected the ball better than in the first test. Where can you find that 9 pass, a loose pass, that 10, the ball drops, that 10 picks the ball up, now 15 has got to cover, he passed over his head again. It's like the high school errors in an All Black team that you won't see a lot of.
But so, Chris, saying that, I mean, we've seen those sort of errors at Springbok level, maybe in when Springbok level was really at its low point. And I think a game in Scotland, where Andre Pretorius dropped the ball behind the try line and Scotland scored. And You do get those moments, but it's usually when a team's confidence is at a low.
For sure. You get, we always talk about the double mistakes. You get one mistake and they shout, fix it, and you fix it. But to get double, oh, it's a sign of low confidence. I'm not so sure. I mean, I think that's where I don't understand with McKenzie at 10 being, if he's got the real kicking game in the play, I feared Barrett, Bowden at 10.
Yeah.
You know, run hard into the vacuum. So those chips and kicks, that chip kicks he gave and he catch them himself. He exploited the spaces better for me than McKenzie is doing. So I'm not so sure I don't know. I heard now TJ is going back to Japan. Money is pulling him there again. So look, there's one guy that's playing bloody well at Sevilla. Oli Sevilla is playing the best rugby ever. So if he's a catalyst as well, if they start following him and he gets them excited again, yeah. But All Black rugby guys, they might eat a dip, but they still the biggest rivals are.
Yeah.
You mentioned McKenzie there. Obviously, he's a key player for them. He had a bit of a ropey first test against Argentina and was much better in the second one. And it looks like Scott Robertson has decided he's the guy at 10. I take it, listening to what you said earlier, that you kind of excited by the prospect of McKenzie playing against the Springboks at 10, especially when we go back to the World Cup final and how our number 7 set about some of the backline players of the All Blacks.
Yeah, you see. Yeah, no, you're right. I think you see what happens with McKenzie at 10. As soon as you rush them very hard on their slow ball, they're not regenerating quick ball, and our rush defense get quickly off the line. What he does, he goes deeper and deeper. And it's exactly what the rush defense wants. He then tries to go deeper and play around you. And if you can't treat rush defense like that, then Jock Smiles, you got to pick and go more, play the blind more, use chip kicks more. You got to nullify the rush. But by going deeper, like McKenzie will do, hopefully, where Barrett is different, he's tough. Look, McKenzie is a great flair player. He's so exciting. But I think the Springbok rush defense will make him go deeper and then in big trouble. I'm not so sure if they will need to at center as well. You know, Leonard Brown, they falling around there as well. For me, I'm not seeing a Sonny Bill and a Tana and those kind of guys that if you hit them hard, they'll hit you back. They'll fight fire with fire. I'm missing that at the moment a bit there.
You touched on it earlier, the both of you, and it was at selection, and because we were talking about what happened 2 years ago. Box won well in Nelspruit and then obviously lost at Ellis Park and made 4 changes, which doesn't seem a lot when you consider the number of changes we've seen to the Bok teams subsequent to that. But they were 4 significant changes at the time. And I think one of them was at Lucid, where Trevor Nyakani had to make way for Oxenchair. And people obviously questioned that. And it wasn't just about the Ellis Park test. Obviously, it was about the future and building capacity, the caps, et cetera, build up to the World Cup. And I think Ox by then had something like 10 or 11 caps. And by the time he got to World Cup, he had 22. So my question to you is, do we, if South Africa win the game at Ellis Park, do you go with changes again, given the way Rassie Erasmus has picked teams before? Do you then expect big changes for the Cape Town test?
Yeah, it all depends for me what happens in the first test. Definitely. I was sitting in selection with Rossi at stages. I think he plans beforehand. Okay, this test, it goes well with this, and then we'll do that. But depending on what happens there, he'll make his changes. You can never tell with Rossi what is going to happen. And we'll decide things and discuss things. And when he walks into breakfast, he's decided, no, I think we should go that route because that's Rossi. So it's unfair for me to even predict. It's unfair to predict. Did you ever thought that in the second test that we have 5 youngsters in the key positions, Hooker, Ariel Lock, 19, 15? No, because that's Rossi. You will do that.
Would you make big changes for the second test?
You're putting me on the spot. I'm a bit different. and you guys know me now I like when we win, and it's maybe a mistake, it's a weakness, but I like when we win. I love to say, to walk into the change room, no changes. I don't even call the team. The 15 is same start. I feel that builds confidence as well. Rossi has proven that he does not do that. When is the last time, you the clever guys with the stats, where he's just picked exactly the same team, no changes?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it. I think it was probably in the World Cup somewhere, if I'm remembering right there. But yeah, there's always one or two changes, even if there's always one or two.
Yeah, you will always come with something and.
Look, maybe the guys that he earmarked for the next test got injured and then they couldn't make the changes.
No, barring injuries. Barring injury. I just know Super Rugby is different as well. I never was the decision maker, the final decision maker in Test Rugby, but in Super Rugby, I know if you had a good win against the Sharks and your next game is the Chiefs at Ellis Park, there's nothing nice and no change, guys. No change. It takes 2 minutes and you can carry on with the job at hand. So it's not thinking and decision making and the new guys in the system. It's one of those things that I love it if you're in the luxury not to make a change. And then you go in an away game, then maybe it's a game, it won't be so bad if you lose it, then I'll rather come and make a change or two, you know? So I'm not one of those, if you lose, let's make 10 changes.
Yeah.
I'm not a tactic kind of guy. I've done it before, but I don't.
What I do want to ask you though is, and the last one on selection for me is just, you get to Joburg, do you play Sasha or do you revert to Andre? And if they win, do you give Sasha a game on his home field?
Guys, you answer that to me, because I don't know how Rossi does that, but Pollard is our goat. He got the kick in the first World Cup against Wales that kept us alive. He came now in the last one. Yes, he should have a statue somewhere in Pretoria or somewhere, and yet he's the goat. So I don't know. I don't know the dynamics in the team. I'm not there. But I still, this Sasha's brilliant. He's going to be the guy. Pollard is still the man. He has done nothing wrong that he's not the man. Don't get me wrong. If he's going to move to 12 some games and Sasha moves in, you know, that's a different story. But to come back to Pollard on the field as a leader there, he's really, which other fly-offs has won 2 World Cups?
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. So we also got you on here for another reason. You've got a new role. You've got to, and I know this is if and but, it's not while we're talking to you, it's about to be confirmed. But maybe you can tell us, what is your new role? Your TV presence is ending now for a while, at least for a while. I'm sure you'll be back at some point. But you've got a new role at SA Rugby.
Yeah, firstly, I'm very thankful for the 5 years I had with the programs at SuperSport. They really looked after me and I loved every second there. So thanks to SuperSport and all the production guys and everyone, Louis Harting and your people around there. I really, really had the best, a wonderful time. But you know, I'm a guy of seasons, and an opportunity arrived at SA Rugby for me to be the performance coach of the national teams under the box, you know, with the women's team and the under-20s and those teams, just working mainly with the coaches and sharing and doing my stuff what I love so much with them, coaching the coaches. And I'm looking forward to that. But in the meantime, I'm with a women team. They said it's apparent until the World Cup next year, where I'm going to work with the coaches and the team and steer the ship for them. So, I thank God for this opportunity so late in my life and career that I can. I never, ever, ever thought a while back that, you know, that I can't even always handle my wife. Now I've got to handle 40 or 30 other women. But saying no, that's just tongue in the cheek. It's just tongue in the cheek. For the 2 days I had so far, I really, really enjoyed it. They soak the stuff that you teach them. They've got such learnable spirits, and we're 12 in the world, and we all want to do better. So I've got great coaches around with me, Franzel and Lorien. They already were the team for the last year or so, and Bafana, who I coached with the Lions under 19, under 20, and he's won two national cups. He just had a terrible under 20 captain, which is not only his fault, because I know his qualities as a coach. So, yeah, it's for me a big honor to work with him. We're 2 weeks in Port Elizabeth now, preparing for 5 tests coming up in September, most of them in Cape Town. Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, John Mitchell, my old mate and rival and enemy, he's with the England team. And Wayne Smith is with the New Zealanders. They're very well mannered. And you don't battle to build fierce or anything. They love what they do. They love it. And so it's Brendan and Liam, it's a complete new field for me, territory. But then, as I said, I love challenges, and it's a great challenge.
So you've obviously come from the outside. You bring a fresh perspective to this job. I mean, did you identify certain things on the outside, obviously, that you feel that needs addressing and that you would want to address?
Yeah, firstly, well, I picked up they can scrum. They're a good set play team. They can maul. They're very, very good. That's those sort of things. So obviously, I'm busy looking at the team profile now, because there's a few sevens ladies joining us as well. So I've got to try. I want to take the emphasis away from just a set play team more to a total team, you know. So I'm working on certain systems that'll suit the team profile. And then what I'm trying to do is just to get alignment going, that we all see the game the same and work on the same fundamentals, the same principles, you know, that sort of thing. So the first 2 weeks, I'm just sort of trying to get those ducks in a row. But there's no shortage of talent here. It's just a case of firstly, for me to understand how they think, and secondly, you know, to align, to make sure that we really see the game the same, and our style of play, everyone must buy in. Everyone must buy in, and that'll come. So far, so good.
Swayze, thanks for chatting to us. I know you've got a big task in your hand there. Good luck with your new challenge, and I hope really it goes well. As there's obviously women's rugby at the moment, they're going into a professional era. There's national contracts coming up. So we're going to see that change happen very quickly, and you're at the forefront of it. And then also with the under-20s and some of the other teams. Look forward to seeing it, and we'll obviously be chatting to you somewhere in the future again. And hopefully...
It's the best of luck.
Hopefully we'll find you on the golf course as well, because I'm sure you're going to have a bit of more chance to play with the golf on the side, not just coach.
I don't even have my golf clubs here. No, the focus is really on getting the rope going. Then from my side, always when I hear it's with you two guys, I've got so much respect for what you've done from your side for South African rugby, Brendan and Liam. So it's always an honor over many years to talk to you and be part, because it's all in our blood, and we all love this game. So thanks to you two.
No,
thanks Wes. Always a very generous share of opinion, Swayze, and we're most thankful that he found the time to come onto the pod again.
Yeah, it was quite a thing getting in with his schedule between the coaching of the women's team and where they've got a moment free, because they're obviously trying to pack in so much in such a short time. But speaking about packing a lot in a short time, the boxers literally arrived back, most of them on Monday and Tuesday, and we're recording this on Tuesday. This is a... The team was announced, the squad, a 37-man squad. I'll just briefly run through the highlights. 5 World Cup winners coming back: Stephen Kitsoff, Kanan Moody, Jaden Hendrickson. And then the other two are the two players who were suspended, Jasper Visser and Andre Esthazen. 2 players drop out of the squad. That is Johan Grobbelaar and Mornay van den Berf. And yeah, quite a good squad as well. It's not often you can say you 10 points up, you've won both your opening games in the rugby championship, and you bring back 5 World Cup winners just to bolster your squad.
That's all good news, obviously, for the Bok camp. But what it does do also is, when you look at arriving at a match day 23 for the first test at Ellis Park, it does complicate things a little bit. But it's a nice problem to have, obviously. We've been going on about the depth in that squad. And, you know, it's almost a situation where you expect Brassi to revert to the World Cup winners from last year, stack the 23 with as many of them as possible. And then if you meet success at Ellis Park and you do so well, maybe bring in a few changes for the Cape Town game. And we touched on this earlier, and it is probably a point worth stressing again. Does he then go with Andre Pollard at Ellis Park and break the Sasha Feinberg and Mzulu grip on the fly-off position this year, and then reinstate him for the Cape Town test? There are so many variables at play here, but it's, I think, overall a very good position to be in.
Yeah, I think we probably will revert back to strongest team. This is, other than Ireland, this is their biggest test, and I think they know that. I think there'll be less experimentation, and if it is, it'll be because they probably saw something in the All Black game plan they feel that they can exploit, and they've got a certain type of player they want to play there. I don't think this is the games to give players chances. One player I didn't mention that when I did my intro about who's in the team, there's a recall, and a rather strange one, Nicholas Janssen van Rensburg, who played one test in 2021. They obviously have some injuries at lock. But is this a situation where Rossi's trying to give another guy a chance? Is he just cover? Or because when I look back, the first question that comes to mind is the player on standby at lock is Ruben van Heerden. And so far, he's sort of been overlooked for all the box squad. So just interesting that a guy like Nicholas Janssen van Rensburg, Rossi says he has a great season at Montpellier, and we're not doubting that. But yeah, they sort of leapfrogged other players.
It is an interesting one, and it's one that I'm unable to put my finger on just yet, because that is why exactly you establish a pecking order. But then again, I mean, he has in the past also, you know, done similar things in other positions to other players. So I suppose it's one way of keeping players on their toes, but it doesn't help us to make sense of it all, because obviously there are the very distinct reasons for him doing this. There's no doubt that they are a little bit thin at lock, especially at five. And it also then poses the question about Erge Snyman. I mean, I know they said he's fit and he can cover four and five. Whether they will consider him at five, I would have thought, given the potency he lends the bomb squad, that he's one of those guys that you can, if you're going to go 6-2 or 7-1 against the All Blacks, and that's been a proven winning formula for them. If he's part of the bomb squad, they've generally been quite successful.
Yeah, I think there might be my sort of take on it. That it might be as simple as, you know, they've got Franco Mostert, who's apparently coming back against Argentina. You've got Arthur, who can play there. You've got Ruanok here, and you're bringing another five locks, so you've got enough cover. That means you don't have to entertain the thought of Peter Steph Tatoi moving back to five, which I thought might be the way to go against New Zealand, and then have Ben Jason at seven. So
I have a distinct view on that as well. As well as you know, as much as he brings, lends an aura of greatness to the five jersey as well, if he plays in it, it's at seven where Peter Steph Tatoe is most devastating. And if you recall the last test against the All Blacks, that is the position in which he made things count. I mean, he was all over that field, number of tackles, and just his general presence. If he plays at five lock, he doesn't get around the park in the same way.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, there are a couple of other situations to maybe talk about. I think Jasper Wiese will come back at eight. I think Kitsy will slot into the match day 23, although, yeah, there is an argument there that Gareth Steenkamp has done pretty well in his absence.
Maybe the Cape Town game for Kitsy for the comeback.
It could be. And then you look at nine, do they make changes? Not sure I would necessarily. I think Kobus Reinach and Grant Williams, it depends on the type of game plan you want to play. Jaden's got a very distinct kicking game. That's obviously his strength as well. So it depends on that. In the midfield, you've got all sorts of options. Damien Delenda, Andre Esthuizen, Jesse Creel, Lucanio Am. I mean, that's an easy. And then I think the one I'm rushing myself here, do you stick with the same wingers who are probably two of the most potent players in scrum caps in world rugby? Or do you say against the All Blacks, who've got a guy like Will Jordan, who's good in the air, do you look for a bigger winger, like Kanan Moody, who's better in the air or is good in the air, to play maybe to counter that threat? That's an interesting one as well.
It is. I want to jump back to scrum off, where you have make a good point. The two blokes who played in Australia didn't do an awful lot wrong. Jaden Hendricks was kind of the understudy for a large chunk of last season, wasn't he? Playing behind Faf de Klerk, and obviously the injury came in a most untimely way. I mean, so he had to sort of fight his way back. I mean, get through the injury and now played Currie Cup rugby for the Sharks, has looked in good nick. Does he leapfrog them? I mean, because he was in front of them not too long ago.
I think you get the sense that in the Tony Brown era, some of those dynamics have shifted, especially at halfback. Where Grant and Kubis maybe leapfrog Faf and Jaden a bit. Same with maybe Sasha leapfrogging Marnie the Bok as well. You see some of those dynamics changing, just guys who probably fit into the game plan a bit better. But yeah, I mean, they've just got back from Australia. We'll bump into them sometime in the next couple of days or early next week. And we'll definitely ask them those questions, because I think we'll have a better sense by next week this time, just exactly what those changes will be and what the Boks will want.
That's right. I mean, we're speculating a lot here because we have a squad of 37 players and there are 14 guys who aren't going to get a look in at Ellis Park. So, but then, you know, it's a theme we've spoken about earlier in the podcast, the depth of Springbok rugby. And we've almost reached that stage where whoever's in that squad, if their name is on the match day 23, you expect that person to do it, not just a decent job, but a one worthy of the jersey.
And I just like the point that, as Sway said in our preceding interview, Rossi can change his mind tomorrow at breakfast and we'll have good
reason. A squad of 38.
Right? And this could all change. So that's why we say, I think we'll get some first-hand knowledge before we sort of might give a definitive answer. But yeah, that's it for this week. We've had a great time chatting to Sway. We've got another interesting guest lined up for next week, which we'll reveal then. But thanks for listening and join us again next week.
Cheerio.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.
That is world class!